Hey, go-getters, let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on noonlife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you need to summarize your class notes or want to create a recipe with the ingredients you already have in your fridge, Meta AI has the answers. You can also research topics, explore interests, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
Introducing the new Starbucks Pairings menu, where you can get a tall brewed coffee or tea, hot or iced, paired with a croissant starting at $5, or with a breakfast sandwich starting at $6. Because at Starbucks, we know that some things are better together. Limited time offer at participating stores. Restrictions apply. Visit starbucks.com/pairings to learn more.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, coming to you directly from Duisburg in Germany, or at least one of us is. My name is Jack Collins, and I'm out here in Germany for the Euros. I'll be your host today. And joining me back in London, Mr. Dean Jones, our transfer guru. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, we're usually the other way around. In past years, I've been the one at the tournament and you've been the one sat back in at home in luxuries. You all sat there in a hotel room, very fancy right now. How are you finding it? How's tournament life? Because it can be tricky, mate. I always say to people, it's actually trickier to follow the tournament when you're at the tournament than it is when you're just sat at home.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. There's definitely not as much sort of depth. Obviously, being here in Germany, the commentary and all of the fan zones and the bars, etc., is all in German. So you get that kind of different way of looking at it. There are less times just sort of sat in front of it and being able to analyze a little bit more. And obviously, when you're around the fans and trying to get content around the grounds, especially, there are bits of it that, you know, you have to sack off for travel and you can't see everything. I've done my best to catch up on everything. So I feel like I'm across the tournament, but I think it's a very different experience. I've had a lot of fun and look, I'm very lucky and very privileged to be out here and not trying to take away from that, but it's definitely a different experience. And I think it's important to kind of note that. There have been good parts and bad parts. We've spoken about them on the Patreon shows and about the kind of different atmospheres. I've had a wonderful time. I was in the fan park in Cologne on Sunday when England played Serbia with a lot of Scotland fans. There was a lot of England fans in there as well, but it was all quite good natured and all quite sweet. Obviously, you see what's going on in Gelsenkirchen, just 40 minutes up the road, and the atmosphere is very different and very charged. And obviously, there were massive logistical problems as well with all of that. So differing experiences based on different things. Yesterday, I was outside Dusseldorf Stadium interviewing France and Austria fans. and try to get some content around that. And the atmosphere was brilliant, you know, real party vibe, real sweet atmosphere, fans mixing, but still having those kind of marches to the ground. We saw the Irresistible, the sort of French national supporters club come in, big banner, big march, some great songs. We saw the Austria lads marching down the road. It was incredible. You know, so much color, so much noise, so much excitement. But the difference, you know, from atmospheres game to game is intriguing, I think, across the course of a tournament like this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you get a completely different experience from the one that you see from a broader perspective at home. But yeah, it's interesting, mate. Let's start by talking just a little bit about France, because today we're going to be getting into some listener questions, which were posed on our Patreon and the post box. Usually we do a set Patreon episode every Monday where we take a Q&A basically, but we've decided to turn that into the main episode this week, so we'll get stuck into that. But first of all, the big news today, as we record this on Tuesday, is the fallout to Kylian Mbappe busting his nose up on Monday night. Current suggestions are that he will miss the group games. He's going to have a mask made. There seems quite a lot of doubt as to whether he's going to be available in time to play in the groups. And look, the big game for France is in a few days. It's the Holland game. Like, that's the one they really
need. That's the game he's going to miss, definitely. I think, yeah, you know, it seems pretty set. Well, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, big Johan is doing a job upstairs for the Netherlands. First, they played Poland without Lewandowski, and now they're going to be playing France without Mbappe. So he's decided it's finally the time for the Orange to win a tournament, I think. But yeah, I mean, look, it was one of those things that it just happens sometimes, right? I don't think there was any particular malice in the challenge. I don't think there was any intent of sort of breaking Mbappe's nose. And the physical nature of the game sometimes and those kind of duels means that, you know, these things happen. I don't think we can be sitting here going, player should have been sent off, Kevin Danso should have, you know, seen red for this kind of challenge. And yet it seems unfair that now Mbappe will have to miss a few games. But it's going to be interesting to see how France cope without him. Massive opportunity for Bradley Barcola, I imagine. Now, Deschamps might stick with the tried and trusted. He might switch flanks for Dembele. He might bring Kingsley Coman, who obviously is playing in his fourth Euros for France here. But there does feel like an opportunity for Barcola, who has thrived off that wing this season for PSG when Mbappe hasn't been selected or available. It does feel like a kind of real moment for him to have a chance to shine, to explode. And against this Netherlands side, especially if they are going to play Dumfries or Frimpong at right back, there's that question of, you know, whether they're that defensively secure in that channel. That felt like such an opportunity for Mbappe to maybe score his first Euros goal. Obviously, that's not going to be happening now. Maybe it is someone with the kind of lightning feet and kind of poise of Barcola who can unlock that defense and actually take advantage of the potential defensive weaknesses in that channel.
Yeah, absolutely that. It'll be interesting. I mean, look, it's not the worst thing in the world to sometimes have to do without your best player at an early stage and then bring them back into the fold. But obviously, you've got top place at stake here. And if Holland were to beat France, then you're suddenly looking at a very different journey towards the final. I know France don't really fear anyone, but you know, they weren't on top form in that first game. And you want time to settle into your rhythm. So, yeah, a very interesting start to the team that many, me included, actually expected to win this tournament. We're going to start the post box by getting stuck into some England chat, and then we'll work our way through the groups over the next hour.
It felt like a good time to do this. I know there's two games remaining, but, you know, at the end of most of this first round of games, obviously there's two afternoon or evening games, depending on where you are here this evening. We're kind of expecting Portugal to pull something out regularly. The big day of shocks felt like it was yesterday. Yeah. It felt like a nice time to be able to reflect on these first games and kind of what we've learned and do that via these questions. I thought it was a nice episode, Dave.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And we'll have plenty of time to reflect on the likes of Portugal throughout this tournament. So especially if you do get onto Patreon, obviously we will be doing drops on there throughout this tournament and throughout the transfer window too. So remember, we're always over there at Patreon, and you can drop in to get loads of extra content from us and Jack's little Euro diaries too.
Daily Euro diary, very exciting. Exactly. These transfer shows, lots going on. So very, very enjoyable. Yeah, let's get stuck into England. We're going to start with this from JK. And he says, possibly a hot take. I think that the bad bits of England's performance are being overblown. The way that Serbia simply sat back, crossed the ball in constantly, and then just hacked down English players in transition didn't really allow for a more stylish game. Absolutely no hate to Serbia for setting up how they felt gave them the best chance. But outside of a few stray passes, mostly by Trent, the genuine Serbia build-up play was a pretty minimal threat, in my opinion. That said, I do wonder if in possession, the versatility is hurting England's fluency. Aside from Rice, Gehi, and at times Walker and Saka, there seems to be a lot of eagerness to fulfil different roles on the pitch throughout the game. I think while that reflects the incredible abilities of those individuals, it might be why the quality of the team has long been less than the sum of its parts. For example, against most opponents, England should win with Kane playing like a normal nine, Foden as a normal left winger, and Trippier as a normal left back to the best of their abilities, even if it doesn't showcase those individuals' best traits. I thought it was a great question because it's probably worth considering how differently players are asked to play for club and country. And it does feel like Southgate is allowing a little bit more of a laissez-faire approach with this England team and allowing them to drift into spaces that they feel comfortable with in order to, you know, help that build up. But I did think about it, and perhaps that kind of lack of width on the left-hand side, especially that there isn't a natural left-back and Foden loves to come in off that wing, might have potentially hurt England's ability to stretch this Serbia defence in the first game.
Yeah, look, it's clear from the heat maps that Foden was drifting inside a lot more than Saka was on the other side. And so that's a reasonable thing to look at as a potential problem with England's balance, particularly because you've got Kieran Trippier playing left back at the moment. I thought in the first 20 minutes, the adaptability and the fluidity of the teams and their positions actually looked really good for England. And I was quite excited about the way it was building up. And I was like, okay, we can score soon. Then I score a second again soon. Then, you know, this could really open up because that second goal never came. You start to revert to type and then the criticism starts to come. You know, there's a lot of nonsense talked though. You just hear so many fans say, you know, let this team go, like let the handbrake off, let this team off the shackles. It doesn't mean anything. It means absolutely nothing. What, you just run around, lads, and run wherever you want. Like, you can't do that. And these players have got to have, you know, refined roles to some extent. He's trying to let them off the shackles by having a bit of adaptability in terms of swapping positions in and out. But quite frankly, I'm not sure that this team has come far enough to be able to do that and earn all of his trust. So it doesn't surprise me that in the end, we have to go back to defending. Look, if we had an out-and-out left winger that had played a lot of games, then I think that we would probably be looking at that. But who do you replace Foden
Anthony
with?
Gordon.
Yeah, Gordon, but that's such a big call to leave Phil Foden out of your team and replace him with Anthony Gordon.
The Premier League player of the year, yeah.
It's a massive call, you know, literally the footballer of the year. And every England player, whenever they're asked, who's the best player on your team? Anthony Gordon himself was actually, there's a post of him yesterday. Who's the best player on the team? And he laughs. He's like, oh, Phil Foden. Like, he's way better than all of us. Like, technically, he's miles ahead of us. This is the best player in the England team. They just don't know how to get the best out of him because he doesn't really want to be stuck out on the left flank. That's not really what he does. But, you know, a Guardiola Man City, a Gareth Southgate England, two very different teams.
Yeah, I agree. But I think it's a fair point in terms of the positivity from JK. And Chris Crimmins adds to this. He says, I know England didn't play brilliantly for the 90 minutes, but I think we showed enough in the first 30 minutes to build off. The things that win, teams that win things are never the team that smashes their first game. It's always the team that builds as they go through. Winning last night shows how far we've come in tournaments past. We'd have conceded or not scored. Finally, I think this result will look better by the end of the group stage because I think Serbia will finish second. Let's all take a moment before we kill this team / Southgate. And Jim Campbell agrees. He says, after the first England goal came, it seemed that we would really kick on and grab a few more, but it didn't happen. Second half performance was a bit poor and Serbia played more aggressively, but it's the opening game. England can move on from this and tournament winners don't always have the best group stage games. I mean, but you only need to go back to the World Cup and look at Argentina's first game where they very much were stunned by Saudi Arabia and the way they kind of recovered from that. It helped them to make some, you know, additions or some kind of changes that allowed them to fix things up a little bit in that side. And I think that over the course of all of those bits and bobs, you do tend to learn. I think France will have learned from their game against Austria last night. Have, you know, the teams who have absolutely romped to victory, have your Germany side, for example, and we'll talk about them all more in a bit more detail later. Have they learned loads from their victory over Scotland? Probably not. Whereas I think England would have learned a little bit about themselves and some of the limitations with certain players currently absent than perhaps others would have.
Yeah, I'm sure they will have. My big take from the night was that we won. Thank goodness we won. And on the back of a performance that many were a bit disillusioned by, felt deflated by, I was actually like, that'll do, job done. First thing I tweeted straight after the game and move on from this moment, because there have been many, many England tournaments in my lifetime where I've seen us mess up games that we should win. We've given away sloppy penalties, sloppy goals, and games that we've dominated should have won against smaller opponents, smaller nations. We haven't won, and we just got the job done. And that was the most important thing from an England perspective. And obviously since then, we've seen Belgium lose. We've seen France only win 1-0. And already you're starting to think, okay, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world, but let's see what happens next. So yeah, I totally agree. Like I hate the fact that so many England fans are just willing to jump on the team and criticize the first moment they get. Like, what's the point? Just enjoy it, right? You're at an international tournament. You've got potentially six games more to go. Like, just enjoy the ride. Like, it doesn't matter whatever you say right now. Gareth Southgate's not listening, right? Just enjoy it. If Southgate's not good enough across this tournament, he will be gone, right? And there's no, that's fine. Like, if he doesn't succeed at this tournament, he deserves to go. Like, someone else deserves a crack. This isn't Gareth Southgate's job forever. He doesn't deserve that. He's not that good. But he has taken us to semi-finals and finals, which is more than most managers have done, even with a golden generation. And so I'd say let's see if he can learn from the problems in that first game. And look, we'll go into some of those now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, I would add it's an incredible privilege to be going to an international tournament. I would kill to have Ireland here, right? And there is that. And
well,
I know the expectations.
The right support, mate, you could have.
Well, you know what? It is what you feel, as they always say. So I haven't done this because I was like, this will be an easier ride. It was is unfortunately not how it works. But look, you're right. And Robert says, is it time to have an uncomfortable conversation around Harry Kane? His instinct to drop deep and receive the ball worked for England teams of old. With all the recent talent in the squad belongs to the attacking/creative core. It almost seems like Kane is not used to having teammates who can find him closer to the goal. Going forward, do England need to look for a different option up front? Should they play more direct-to-goal wingers, or should Watkins or Tony play at the same time as Kane? This is a really interesting question. And I think that when you examine how, one, this Bayern side have obviously struggled a little bit this year, that's nothing to do with Kane in terms of his goals have been remarkable. He has carried England for some time, I think, in terms of what he's produced at the top end of the pitch. At Tottenham, he was very much seen as the main man. There are now players around him for this England side that maybe do have that, you know, step up in terms of creative talent. And we're talking about, you know, players of the season in the Bundesliga, in the Premier League, in La Liga as well, with Jude Bellingham in there, with Phil Foden in there, with Bukayo Saka in there. There's a lot of talent, but there's a lot of talent that also is creative and wants to make things around those areas. If Kane needs to adapt his game slightly, I have every faith that he'd be able to do that. But I do think it's probably something worth considering at this point.
Well, I think he's played a bit differently since he's been at Bayern Munich anyway. I think that his game's changed a bit since the days when he was at Tottenham and having to do every single job in the team. And I think that his role with England is changing too. I mean, he didn't used to have players who could link up play as well as they can now. You didn't have players like Jude Bellingham and Declan Rice who could join everything together as neatly and efficiently and effectively as they actually do. So no, we don't want Kane coming back and doing all that stuff. We want him close to goal. We want him converting chances. And when I see stats like, well, he only touched the ball twice in the first half, I don't care. I don't care if Harry Kane only touches the ball once in a half, once in a game. As long as that moment is the big chance that ends up in the back of the net. And he got one big chance. He really couldn't have done much more with it. It was a brilliant header. The keeper's done amazingly well to actually keep it out and push it against the bar. But I'm completely comfortable with barely seeing Harry Kane for 90 minutes because I know that in the moments that count, we have pretty much the best number nine you could hope for. And I think my dad said this to me. He's like, I think I'd leave out Harry Kane for the next game. Mate, I nearly punched him. Lucky it was Father's Day. It was like ridiculous.
This is what international tournaments do to people.
It's like,
people punching their own
about?
Dad.
What are you talking about? You do not leave out Harry Kane for even a minute if you can help it, because he is the best at what he does, just scoring goals. Look at his goal scoring record for England, for Tottenham, for Bayern Munich. It is absolutely outrageous. Now, if you're looking for a different option to go, I appreciate maybe you want more direct to goal wingers, like that sort of stuff is fine. But I also say bring in.
But also,
players,
that comes back to the Phil Foden conversation, because yeah. how do you make that work?
But look at what Jarrod Bowen does the second he comes on. The way that he tries to make chances, the way he did make Kane's chance, that was a different way to goal than we were looking at before, and that's something for Gareth Southgate to actually consider, because a few of these players, maybe Tony, certainly Jarrod Bowen, that wouldn't have been the popular pick, can actually fill a good role. Maybe Anthony Gordon too. Like, they, for club, are very effective and efficient. And I'll keep using those words, because I think that's exactly why Jarrod Bowen's actually made it to this tournament. Because when you consider the opportunities that he gets per game at West Ham compared to what most of this team get at their club level, it's not as high. And Jarrod Bowen typically has a very, very good rate around the 18-yard box of scoring and assisting. And I think that that's why he's in this team, because he wants to bring off people off the bench who he knows just need that 2 yards of space, that one decision to make, and they make the right call. And that's why these players are there.
Yeah, finishers, as Gareth Southgate and Eddie Jones, as well, and Robbie calls them. Right, a couple more just to reel off for England. Brant Cole says, Saka's shutting up all the haters this weekend. You absolutely love to see. I mean, brilliant performance from him down the right, I thought. And Clack says, why is everyone trying to force Trent into centre midfield? It clearly doesn't work. I know you've got some thoughts on this, DJ.
I don't like it. I've never liked it. I mean, I don't mind it time to time if he wants to do it at club level, and maybe even for England time to time. I think that when you get deep into a tournament, it's going to cause problems. I just think that I personally would rather have Conor Gallagher in there. And I know loads of people will be like, what are you talking about? Conor Gallagher? Yeah. I'd rather have Conor. If this is how Gareth Southgate team works, Conor Gallagher is absolutely perfect for it, because he ticks all of the boxes of what Gareth Southgate wants in a player, how he looks after the ball, how he tries to win the ball, and all of these different things. And Trent does not have the top level experience of dealing with receiving the ball in these moments, in these areas, in big games. And you see, the only big chance that Serbia had in that first half is a giveaway from Trent. And I don't want to go over and over and over it, and, you know, the rest of his career, but it seems to be happening at the moment for him since the game happened. But it was a big moment and it could have cost us. And that's just against Serbia. So what happens once you get deeper into the tournament and you are playing the best teams? They will make that moment count. I don't know if Gareth Southgate will stick with him. He's been pretty selective in his words when he's been asked about whether he's going to be in the team going forward. Basically said he's going to keep his options open. But, you know, I think I identified it from the start. The two major flaws in this England team that could cost us a run are whoever the third midfielder is and that left side of centre defence problem that we've got, in that they're not communicating as you do. You know, they don't know each other that well, and they're Trippier's out of position. Like, that's the problem we've got.
Well, I think it's interesting. I actually think it was the right call for this game.
Because I don't mind it for that game. I just hope he's not like... I don't think he should play against Denmark, I'll be quite frank.
It's fair. I think that if England are lacking a genuine left-sided option, and Kyle Walker is playing right back, which I think he probably had to do here, considering that the way that Serbia were going to try and stick the ball up to the back post to attack, I think that he probably couldn't have had Trent at right back in that moment. We've seen Alexander Mitrovic do that against Trent before. So you have to get something, you know, that defensive line has to work. And obviously England are kind of forced at the moment by Southgate selection to play an unfooted player at the wrong side at left back, right? Fine. So where does the creativity and where does your own kind of box come from? I think in this game, allowing Trent to kind of stick those balls into those areas from that right-sided pocket, if you will, makes sense. Do I think it should probably be the answer if you can later in the tournament, or you are playing a different side and you can maybe justify putting Trent in at right back a little bit differently? If you can justify having Luke Shaw back in and he's fit, suddenly that threat changes on the left-hand side, then maybe you look at bringing something different into that centre midfield role. But I think it's a fair point. Right, last three to round this off. Rishi says, so many goals at the Euros already, but Gareth Southgate exists. How he manages to take the life out of such lovely and enjoyable sport is beyond me. Fergus says, it reminds me a lot of the various 1-0 Southgate exploratory games. Some things could be better, but for the most part, I was impressed by Gaye, Pickford, Rice, Saka, and a couple of others. Don't get me started on Jude. Simply sublime. Dear footballing gods, please let him be injury-free. Let him see the full extent of his career. And Armand finishes off. He says, I'm convinced if Southgate was not managing England since 2016, the team could have achieved success similar to Spain's golden era from 2008 to 2012, winning multiple trophies. Despite having an incredibly talented squad, Southgate's tactics are overly conservative and cautious. I mean, I'm sure that Didier Deschamps is somewhere laughing, but I can understand why these things are being thrown around.
Yeah, look, Southgate didn't want to lose that game. And it's a very difficult situation when you're the other manager, because you don't want to go too front-footed and leave the back door open and suddenly you get countered and you concede a goal and you draw 1-1. And I know that by becoming a bit more conservative and trying to shut the door wasn't fun to watch, but it did ultimately work. And Gareth Southgate comes out of that game, England, the top of the group with 3 points, which no one else has managed to get from our group. And that's basically 1 foot into the last 16. So his job is actually done there. What will give Southgate a bit of a headache, I think, say we beat Denmark. If we do beat Denmark, I think it's going to be a narrow win, right? I don't think we're going to go and blitz Denmark at the week on Thursday. But I do fancy us to win narrowly. Now, and if that happens, you then go into the final group game against Slovenia with your place already sorted. And then you're like, okay, so do I throw Gordon or Eze into the mix? Do I give Cole Palmer an opportunity? And then those players, if they bang in that match, which could easily happen, you could put out an England B team against Slovenia. I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean, because the B team is so good that they could actually go and beat Slovenia 2-3.
Especially with no pressure on them, right?
No,
if qualification
pressure
is secure, if top spot is secure, then obviously that kind of changes the outlook on the game.
Yeah.
And I think that if you go into that game with something on the line, maybe it's very different in terms of how it plays out. I think there's a fair point to be made there, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's where Southgate might be facing a dilemma over whether he gets away with the approach beyond that point, because the country wants to see these
players. If you get a Cole Palmer hat-trick against Slovenia, yeah, then obviously people are going to be like, he has to play in the last 16.
But he doesn't really fit with Southgate's general mentality for how you're going to play tournament football from the start. But Cole Palmer, as you said, a sensational season. Every time he walks out onto a football pitch, seems to score an assist. So he probably will. If he gets the opportunity against Slovenia, the chances are he will be the best player on the pitch. And then Southgate's like, okay, now I've got big.
I've given myself a selection headache. Absolutely.
American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part or roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.americanloghomesandcabins.com.
Right, let's move on from England. Let's go to Denmark quickly. Brant says, Eriksen scoring in his first match back at the Euros is an all-timer for Narrative FC. Yeah, and what a lovely goal as well. It was, you know, obviously not the result that they would have been hoping for, but to see that moment, and you know, he has that freedom in this side. The knockdown from Jonas Vind is absolutely glorious.
It is.
It's a brilliant goal and a really lovely moment for Christian Eriksen. Denmark didn't look as cohesive as I think perhaps they had done in the warm-up games. And, you know, we kind of cautioned a little bit around those warm-up games to not take anything too seriously, to allow them to be that pinch of salt. Denmark didn't look great here, but it kind of does come to a point that you're looking at it and going, they could also grow into this. And there is a lot of experience in that team. There was a lot of kind of youthful abandon about the way that Slovenia went for them towards the end and kind of got their just rewards for, I thought, a very, very impressive performance. Denmark will have learned from that. And now they have this very, very interesting tie against England that kind of they need to get something out of if they're going to progress.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a Premier League match, to be honest. I mean, when you look at the Denmark side and how many of their players have experience within the Premier League and the type of football that they play and stuff, the reason I think that England do come out on top is that I think you match them up. And while Denmark do definitely have strength and experience and a strong mentality, they're not as good. And ultimately, if your centre and midfield, say they go with the same combination that they had against Slovenia, and it's Christian Eriksen ahead of Pierre-Emile Højbjerg and Morten Hjulmund, well, you're putting that up against Declan Rice, Jude Bellingham, and one other of the Conor Gallagher's, Kobbie Mainoo's, whoever else we talk about, Trent or Adam Wharton, that England should have the edge there. And that's going to be so key. Now, look, Jonas Vind is a very good player. I'm not any doubt about that. And Rasmus Højlund will know how he's going to come of opportunities against this defence because he's been seeing them all season. But yeah, their big question mark is how they do not become overpowered in the middle, because even if they look to change things up, for example, the way that they did try to change things up in their last game, they're bringing Norgaard on for Højbjerg, they bring Delaney on for Hjulmund. Again, like, good players with experience, but you're talking about England players that are riding the crest of a wave, like, they're fearless. They should be fearless anyway. I just think that England have got a bit more verve, and that's where they catch this Denmark team out on Thursday. Christian Eriksen scoring is, like, obviously a great narrative, and I was delighted for him. Can he cause England problems? I don't know, really, mate. I don't know that I trust Eriksen to cause that many problems.
Off the back of the season he's had, yeah. No, I mean, I can understand that as well. I mean, like, I think there is talent in this Denmark side. I think that they probably have left a few of the key men at home from that perspective, as we talked about before the tournament. Let's come on to the opener and let's talk about Germany, because Luke Shaw says, Florian Wirtz is the football man, which I just really liked as a take. Matt Stevenson said, do you expect Germany to continue with the fluidity of Havertz, Wirtz and Musiala as a trio, as the constant movement switching positions of the front three made it difficult for the Scotland backline to track them? Or do you expect full crew to get more game time following two goals? This may make the German attack more blunt and direct than previously, which could lead to difficulty if Switzerland/Hungary set up in a low block. Well, if Hungary play anything like the first half that they did in that Swiss game, then the German attack is going to make mincemeat out of that defence, because they were absolutely all over the place. And that shout at as dark horses looks kind of weirder every minute. They did have a better second half, obviously, but really quite poor. I think that Germany will stick with this and use Füllkrug as the battering ram that he came on as. And obviously, considering the defenders had been all over the place in terms of trying to deal with that front three and chase them, and especially considering they were down to 10 men for most of the game, or at least the entire second half, trying to deal with Wirtz, Havertz and Musiala just interchanging positions at will becomes an incredible task for anyone, but even more with 10 men. But allowing then Füllkrug to kind of take advantage of that and that tiredness when he did come on and find that space. So yes, there's different options here. I think that plays into Germany's hands, and that ability to mix things up depending on opposition, depending on game state. There's a lot to like about that Germany attack.
Yeah, well, I'd be amazed if they were to mix this up. And I think actually, when you talk about finishers, game finishers, Fulkrug's ideal to be bringing on, because you're starting to wear this team down with the constant movement of Havertz and Wirtz and Musiala, and then you got Fulkrug coming on to just finish chances like later on in the game. Like, he's probably a decent, like, if Germany get deep into this tournament, he's probably a decent shout for to be top goal scorer at the tournament, because he's going to be killing off teams late in games. Like, that might not actually be the worst shout in the world. But you can't change what we saw. Like, the first half, the way that some of the movements and patterns we were seeing from Germany were brilliant. Look, obviously, I think Scotland are the worst team so far at the tournament from where I was sitting. Yeah, Scotland are the worst team at the tournament so far. I have to say that. They didn't have a shot. They didn't have an offside. They didn't have a corner. They did nothing, right?
They did score.
They didn't. Germany scored for them. So
I knew you were going to say that.
So
they're winning the battle out here in terms of the fans, though. There are Scots everywhere, and they're having the time of their lives. And I am loving being amongst them. It's such a happy, positive, friendly atmosphere. I'm very much enjoying myself. Shout out to Scots.
That's good. No, that's good. But you know, it is hard to know. Germany could go and win by this same scoreline again in game two. They really could. Again, like in my Euro fantasy team, I didn't know if I needed Musiala or Wirtz, so I went with both. I'll tell you what, Jack, in our Ranks FC league, it's really helped me.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's gone well for you.
It's gone very well for me. And you know what? I'm not changing it. I thought I was going to be dropping one of those out for this game week and bringing in like a Bellingham or something. But absolutely no, I'm not. I think these two need to be in the team until the day that these Germans go out the tournament, if they do go out the tournament. So yeah, I expect that they are going to be staying in the team, Matt. I can't see that you could mess that up, and Fulkrug to come on is just a great monster to have off the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Arnav doubled down on this. He said, out of all the teams I watched over the weekend, I thought the host nation were the most impressive. Germany not only played the most entertaining brand of football, they also attacked with the most fluidity, and they had a defence so solid that Scotland couldn't even manage to get a shot on target. What do you think were the tactical changes that Nagelsmann made to this Germany side to make them click and to completely neutralise Scotland? I mean, they dominated from the whistle, right? And I think that considering that kind of wave of optimism that started to sweep over the country, you know, there were a lot of question marks over what this side actually looked like. There was some big performances, some impressive wins in these preseason friendlies. But, you know, we're kind of looking at it. We're saying, take all of those with a pinch of salt. They haven't had a qualification process because obviously they qualify automatically as hosts. So, you know, a lack of competitive action is an interesting one. When you come into a tournament, you don't quite know exactly what it's going to look like. But, you know, they were able to seize control of this game so kind of immediately that all we saw was this kind of relentless wave of German attack. What's going to be interesting is how they do when they come up against someone who isn't going to allow them that kind of ball dominance, who isn't going to be able to, you know, who will be able to stand up to that wave and win the ball back and hurt them in different areas. But, you know, I said before the tournament, I think that Nagelsmann was the best manager at this tournament, but it did feel like we're at a point now where you're kind of just looking at it and going, well, the evidence in front of us suggests that Germany is really good. Do we put that down to, you know, Scotland's struggling in this game really quite badly and some of the decisions that they made? Or are we putting this down to the fact that this German side has a plethora of wonderful players playing in roles that suit them because Nagelsmann is good at this kind of thing? So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. And it's interesting to kind of look at it and kind of see how they get on now in these next two games, because if they blitz the group, is that actually giving them what they need to come up against someone in, say, quarterfinals and be able to deal with a different type of football? That's, I think, what's going to be interesting here. I think the fact that they have Switzerland last in the group is probably a positive for Germany, because they can maybe trial some kind of different ways of doing things. And the Swiss looked so good in that first half, especially against the Hungarians. And just finally on Germany, Rishi says, maximum of only six more games of Toni Kroos playing football, the best level he's ever played in his career. Pain. This Germany team looked really good since he was returned, right? That's not just because of my bias. I think it's playing a big part. When you have a player like Toni Kroos coming back in there, on the form he's on with the Champions League in his back pocket, it's always going to give everybody a lift. And I thought that he was exceptional in this game, as was pretty much everybody in a Germany shirt. Yeah. So it's hard to kind of look at it. Let's go to the rest of Group A. And Finn says, are Hungary overhyped? I personally always thought they would finish third behind Germany and the Swiss, but a lot of people seem to disagree. Was that one bad game or an indication of how their tournament would play out? And Noah says, what did you make of that Hungary performance? Do you think tournament experience / know-how made the difference? Or did the weight of expectation for the first time in a long time seem to burden them, in your opinion?
I mean, they were definitely underwhelming, weren't they? It was a tough one. I was at a wedding on Saturday, so it was I was watching this game on my phone and trying to socialize at the same time, so I can't say that I had the closest eye on it, but I did watch the first half pretty closely. And once the second goal was in, you know, there was a very little sign of them coming back. And I think that is a bit of a surprise, because they were so hyped, but there were no signs at all of them actually living up to the expectation, was there? So I don't think that it should burden them that people are expecting something of them. I don't believe that can be a thing. I think that's something that should excite them. But that is a massive defeat, 3-1 to Switzerland. Switzerland are a pretty good team, don't get me wrong, but like, the fact that they were barely in the game is a bit of a concern. Like, they obviously came back into it and they could have got something, but it was just the belief wasn't there that was going to happen.
I think what's really interesting is that as soon as things started to go a little bit wrong, and look, that first half was dreadful, Szoboszlai decided he wanted to do everything. And actually, I don't think it particularly helped them, because, you know, what he's best at is pulling the strings in there and allowing everyone else to flourish. There's always that kind of image of, you know, like a puppet master being able to bring everyone else up. And instead of that, he seemed to be like, I'll drop the puppets and just try and do it all. And actually, that's not as good a spectacle, and it didn't work from a Hungarian perspective. I still think there's a lot of talent here. I do think they froze up a little bit. And I think, to be honest, we'd started to see those in the warm-up games. That performance against Ireland was dreadful. And then they've come in and played very similarly in the first half. And, you know, that's a worry. They did start to open up, and obviously the goal that gets them back into it comes after a massive missed opportunity. There's some really nice work in terms of how that builds up. And, you know, obviously the Brilliant Mbolo goal makes this look like a worse defeat than it actually was. A lovely finish from Mbolo, by the way, who has a great song from the Swiss fans who sing a song to a Wimbleway for Brilliant Mbolo, which is excellent, and very much enjoying that. But I think that they just felt like Switzerland had that calmness, that experience, that ability to dictate. And obviously Granit Xhaka has another absolutely sensational game. Remo Freuler, I thought next to him, shackled Szoboszlai beautifully. And the way that he was able to just stop that creative hub from working was a massive part of the Swiss dominance in this game. But as this Hungary team, you know, go into the second game now, they know that they need to find a way. And I think that if they allow themselves, you know, they will be underdogs against Germany, that might help, because there's not that pressure to come out and absolutely smash it. I think there is the, you know, ability to trust in what they were doing before again. Do I think they're going to get anything in this game? Not if Germany play the way that they did against Scotland, because that kind of performance is very difficult to live with. But, you know, the fact that Hungary will come into this as underdogs rather than as kind of tipped dark horses might just play into their hands a little bit as well. But it's going to be interesting to see how they approach it, because so much of their qualification campaign was brilliant. And you get to this and there is that real sense of freezing. I wonder what happens now in this next game, knowing that, you know, basically anything apart from a point would probably rule them out of qualifying automatically, you know, in the top two. And what they'll have to then do is try and make sure that they absolutely hammer the last game, which is no easy feat in itself, right?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, mate. It's going to be interesting. Like, there's some really interesting storylines playing out for the second game, because it's always such a, you know, the key, isn't it? Like, you go out in the second game. This is the risk and reward that you are toying with. Like, and that's why teams will be so caught between whether to actually try to play up to their full potential or just sit in and try and count them, because there's so much at stake for that second match. Italy, got a first win despite falling behind against Albania. This is the team that I tipped for a shock group stage exit. And I tell you what, when their first goal went in, I was like, oi, oi, I might be right. But fair play to Italy. They managed to establish some composure and control and quickly get the game turned around. And Nick says, two of the biggest items on my bucket list have always been to see the Azzurri play live and to see a match at the Westfalenstadion. I feel extremely lucky to have done both on Saturday night. Oh, amazing, mate. He says, shout out to the Albanian fans for making the experience even more unforgettable. The scene in the streets of Dortmund in the stadium was exactly what makes the game beautiful. As for the match, this is what Italy's Achilles heel has been my entire life. They're one of the world's best and they let the opponent into the contest by being so casual time and time again. Make no mistake, Italy did dominate from the moments following Di Marco's throw-in disaster. That was a disaster as well. It was one-way traffic. I thought the game plan of using Scamacca and Chiesa largely as decoys to exploit the half spaces for Fratesi and Pellegrini worked brilliantly, but neither could finish their dinner. The midfielders, aside from Barella, lacked dynamism, a killer instinct, and an ability to eat the space they turned into. Despite this, I thought Italy were brilliant in the first half following the mistake. The problem was in the second half, where Italy seemed to have no interest in scoring, only in putting the game to sleep. And as usual, it nearly cost them. As I said to my dad at the end of the match, there's a reason Germany destroyed Scotland 5-1, because they were never satisfied until the match was buried. And even then, they still surged on. Italy never seemed to have that same killer instinct. Your thoughts?
I think that'll come under Spalletti because we saw what he did. And look, we spoke about him at the start of the tournament saying, has he had enough time with this side? That doesn't mean the expectations are any lower because Italy are defending champions and obviously one of the biggest and most successful nations in European history. So we're kind of looking at a space where you're kind of like everyone expects Italy to deliver. This is a young team under Spalletti. And I don't necessarily mean that in terms of the players' ages. I mean, in terms of how he's going to shape them up. But I thought a lot of it was really, really good. And I think there's space for Italy to grow as well. I thought the way that Calafiori stepped out of defence and allowed those spaces to open up was sensational. And, you know, we're talking about Fratesi and Pellegrini here. Yes, they had bad games in terms of end product. But we know that both of those players can deliver on the big stages because we've seen it. So if Italy continue to make those kind of chances, create those kind of opportunities for these kind of players, I can only think things will get better from here. And actually, having watched them and, you know, when they go behind here, you're a bit like, ooh, as you say, a lot of people tipping Italy to have a shock exit at the group stage or at least to struggle at this Euros. Instead, they kind of really rallied. They came together and the plan worked. I was impressed by a lot of it. And yes, okay, there maybe wasn't that killer instinct to finish it off once the game went to 2-1. But equally, there is a belief in that defensive line that they can hold out. And we've just spoken about England in the same kind of vein. We've spoken a little bit about France in the same kind of vein as well. I think that Italy were, you know, get through the first game, get the win on the board. That probably guarantees you at least the third place spot. You're in a decent spot at that point. And I think it's going to be intriguing to see if Italy can now kick on from that now that maybe they're a little bit safer in their game. Or how they, you know, face up to this Spanish side who we'll talk about a little bit in a minute. But yeah, I thought a lot of it was really, really good and I was impressed with Italy.
Yeah, they were good at carrying out what they wanted to carry out. I think we have to leave it at that for now. And it's a game one win, which, as I say, a lot of people, me included, were doubting was possible. Brandt says, is Nicolò Barella the most underrated midfielder in the world? Granted, I don't watch much Serie A, but every time I see him play in the UCL or for Italy, he's brilliant. I feel like the only person I know constantly putting him up there with the likes of Kroos, Modric, KDB, Odegaard, Bernardo is our very own Jack Collins. Is it a case of being an Inter rather than one of the Spanish big two, a Prem side or another super club? I'd say it's a pretty good team. Genuinely curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, obviously this Inter side have been brilliant and that's fine. But unless you watch Serie A, you know, I do think there is probably a sense that, you know, considering they crashed out of the Champions League to a struggling Atleti who only just about got back into the Champions League themselves, there could be a sense that that team is potentially a little bit underrated. I mean, he's a wonderful footballer and the way that he makes things happen, his end product is excellent. He can do so many different things, Barella, that sometimes when his output isn't that high, you're a bit like, why? But he fulfills a role and he fulfills the need of his team at all points. So, you know, when Italy are looking for someone to pop up with a goal from central midfield, who's the man that steps up? Nicolò Barella. If Inter are changing tack a little bit and they're utilising the wings a little bit more than they did last season and, you know, trying to release a front two that play a little bit differently to what they did last year, yeah, Barella dropped in. He didn't produce as much, but he was a key cog in why they were so brilliant. I absolutely adore the man. I think he is definitely up there with the most underrated players out there. And he doesn't often get put in that category. I think you should be in there more regularly.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Sean LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Andrew Jensen says, got to give some love to Albania. Fastest ever goal in the Euros is something to be proud of. Come on, you red and blacks. Am I wrong to think we have a legit chance of getting 3 points against Croatia on Wednesday? Believe, Andrew. It's very important that you get stuck into these and the, you know, opportunities. It feels like, considering the performance, I think people have maybe been a little bit harsh on Croatia. I thought Spain were very, very good, but I thought on the whole, in terms of the game, there was enough for Croatia to be positive about. Equally, I think you kind of look at the way that Albania started and the way that they finished that game against Italy. I think there is enough there for them to cause teams problems as well. And if Croatia defend like they did against Spain, I would absolutely not rule out Albania scoring. And if they are on the score sheet and they make things happen, then equally you give them more than a puncher's chance, especially if Croatia are reeling a bit from the fact that they lost so aggressively in a game that they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, I think that's right. Croatia, I'll tell you what though, they could always go far. Like I'm reasonably impressed.
They do hate Euros. They only turn up at World Cups.
Yeah. There's just so I can never, I say never rule out the Germans, but I never rule out the Croatians instead, because they just have such a good mindset and they know each other inside out. So yeah, always intrigued by what they can produce. Doug was at the game. He said, I was at Spain v Croatia. What a way to spend a Saturday. But how was Rodri not sent off? Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise to many that he managed to avoid a red card in that game against Croatia. Obviously, Spain did manage to get off to a good start. And I'm very content with what I saw from Morata, as after what I said in the preview, I have to say, Jack. But yeah, there was a lot of talk about Rodri, who was lucky, let's say, not to have been sent off for a foul on Petkovic. But I think by the rules now, he was saved, wasn't he? I mean, saved by the rules, I guess, sounds stupid, because the rules are the rules, and what, you're not saved if you haven't broken a rule. But in the past, I think it would have been a red. And the way things are now, he's got away with it.
Yeah, I mean, that is very much kind of, this is actually rule book number 13A.3. But it is what it is. He probably should have been sent off. You're absolutely right. Spain,
well, two seasons
ago,
he would have been. That's the fact. He would have been. But because they change the way that it's deemed now, if a player is deemed to have made a natural attempt to win the ball, then you're all right, basically.
Mm. Yeah, weird one.
And that didn't used to be the case.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Randy says, been a fan since the start of 2020 and finally got onto the Patreon. Let's go. Oh, it's good to have you, Randy. It's great to have you. Anyways, opinions on the best fullback partnership in the last season, Grimaldo and Frimpong both being benched. We'll talk about the Netherlands in a second, but Grimaldo not starting on that left-hand side, I think would have been a surprise to Manny. Cucurella getting the nod. I thought, to be honest, Cucurella did pretty well on that left-hand side, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them interchange throughout the tournament. But in terms of, you know, how brilliant Grimaldo has been throughout this season, it is difficult to look past him. Equally, you know, De La Fuente obviously is looking for someone who's potentially got a little bit less of an attacking mentality to going down that side. And look, that's not saying much, because Cucurella was very much a left winger and came backwards to end up as a left back. But with Nico Williams on that side, perhaps he was just looking for something a little bit more solid to bring things off and what looked like an incredibly tricky game to get things started for Spain. So no, I'm not hugely surprised by it. I thought that Spain tended to get things right in this game. I was really, really impressed with how they went about their business. I was really impressed with a lot of players. Carvajal and Lamine Yamal down that right-hand side, I thought were both brilliant, not just because of the end product. I thought that both of them had fantastic games. Across it, I was really impressed with Fabian Ruiz in the midfield, who was the kind of shock selection, if you will, in inverted commas. I'm not sure how we're still talking about Fabian Ruiz as a shock selection, but if there was going to be a place in that Spain team where people are like, oh, okay, I think he was probably it. And I thought he performed incredibly well as well. So yeah, look, Spain got a lot right in this game. There is still things to build on, I think, for them. And there's still lessons to be learned and they will need to grow into this tournament. But on the whole, I think that's about as good a start as they could have possibly hoped for. And they'll be very happy with the outcome of it, if not the entire performance. The Netherlands, the Dutch, also out here in numbers. Jake Wiegman says, if you're Ronald Koeman, what changes do you make versus France? And Sam says, Koeman feels very stubborn in his lineup choices, and yet the Dutch pulled out the win. What are the pros and cons of the game as we look towards France? I mean, obviously, we talked about Mbappe at the top, Dean. The fact that he is not there, does that change the way that the Netherlands set up for this game, do you think?
No, I mean, it makes them more confident that they can win the game. I mean, I'd say that much. It would be a huge ask for Mbappe to play that game because not only the actual pain of right now that he's got with a broken nose and replacing his septum or something that seems to have happened straight after the game. It was that bad an injury. Just reading about that. And they've got to make a mask. Like, if you're going up for an aerial duel with Stefan de Vrij or Virgil van Dijk, they ain't going to be messing about. They're not going to be taking it delicate on you. And so I wouldn't be playing Mbappe in that game, even if there was a risk, even if there was like something, a lesser risk of there being further complications, because this is a fantastic opportunity for the Netherlands to go on and actually win this group. I don't know that I would change a lot, mate. I think I'm just trying to look at their starting lineup now from the other day to see what I would actually alter and the changes that he might be considering. And I don't see that starting lineup any obvious need for change. The earliest subs he made were Joey Veerman coming out and Wijnaldum coming on. I can't see how Veerman wouldn't start the game against the French. Xavi Simmons was replaced by Daniel Marlon. I don't think I could see the need for Marlon to start. I think Xavi Simmons will be wanting to start in a game like this. You know, good chance for him to show PSG what he's really made of. So I think the Dutch can just go with what they had. I know it took a reasonably late goal from Weghorst to tie up the win and overturn a first half deficit that they held against Poland, but. Yeah, look, Sam says Koeman feels very stubborn in his lineup choices, and yet the Dutch pulled out the win. And stubbornness is a trait that he's got, but he's also...
It is important, I think, to kind of note here that they were the better team here. And look, yes, it took a late goal. Yes, maybe there were opportunities that were missed from a Netherlands perspective to make this more comfortable. Equally, I thought that the way that they set up and the way that Dumfries was used down that right-hand side to create width down there and actually open up that Polish side who played with kind of, you know, that kind of flat formation to try and deal with that was really nice. There were some lovely interchanges. I mean, look, there were moments and Depay and I think Hakpo as well, both guilty of missing pretty gilt-edged opportunities. But, you know, sometimes you kind of look at it and go, at the end of a game, you kind of reflect on it and go, yeah, okay, it was late, but that the right results just come out. You know, they were a team that earned it. They were the team that looked more likely to score and eventually got the just rewards. And look, we just talked about someone like Füllkrug coming on for the Germans and playing in a very different way. It's the same thing here with Wout Weghorst, right? And he comes on, he scores a massively important goal. This is not the first time we've seen him do it. But we're kind of at that space where, you know, you spent the entire game chasing around after Depay and Hakpo, who have that kind of illusionist tendency to go missing and then suddenly appear in the right place. You're like, hang on, where did he come from?
Yeah.
And then you bring on Weghorst and they're like, oh, that's a completely different question you're asking of centre-backs. It's a completely different question you're asking of defences. And it obviously unlocks the door for the Dutch. I don't think they need to make loads of changes. I think they need to stick with, you know, what the system, the plan A that they've got going on here. And there will, if they play like that again, be opportunities against France to hurt them if France play like they did against Austria, because that wasn't a perfect performance either. I'm really looking forward to this game. And I think that when you kind of take it all in one kind of hit, there is this big kind of feeling that the Dutch are being written off by loads of people. And look, that includes me at times, because I wasn't sure under Koeman if they could go, and I wasn't sure why he wasn't playing with this three at the back system that seemed to get them best out of a lot of these players. Equally, this performance, I think, quietened a lot of those nerves, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they approach these two games against the French and then obviously against Austria as well. So I'm excited to see how they go. And I think that when we're kind of looking at it in context, there's a lot to like about this Dutch performance.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's good view in that. Holland, France is on Friday night here in the UK, 8 p.m. So that's a great evening of football for everyone to look forward to. The next question was sent in before actually the surprises took place. But Tommy says, 7 games in and still no surprises in results. No, because I think they happened as soon as you sent in this question, Tommy. He says, but from what we've seen so far, who do you think will over and underachieve? Well, in the hours that followed, Romania beat Ukraine 3-0.
How good were Romania?
Mate, they've got a fantastic opportunity here in our Romania, because not only have they beaten Ukraine 3-0, but the other match in their group ended Belgium 0, Slovakia 1. So after one match in Group E, Romania are top, Slovakia are second, Belgium 3rd, and Ukraine 4th. Now, Romania's next game is against Belgium, which, look, they could easily lose. Belgium, despite the fact they lost to Slovakia, Lukaku had 2 goals ruled out, he missed 3 other good chances. Belgium actually played pretty well and could easily have won that game, right? And there's every chance that Belgium go and beat Romania. But Romania then play Slovakia in their final group game. Romania have got a good chance of now winning Group E. And if they do that, in the last 16, the team that they get will be one of the best placed third teams. So they could be the likes of Hungary or Albania or Slovenia.
Or the Netherlands.
Poland, like, whatever, yeah. Like, but they have a good chance then of a winnable last 16 game. So right now, as it stands, Tommy, Romania have the best chance of overachieving, because I don't even know if I mentioned them in the preview, mate. That is so disrespectful. I didn't.
Don't worry,
give
I did. So this is it. I've got a hot take on this. I think that Romania have a better chance of being Belgium than they do Slovakia.
Wow.
Because I think they're incredibly comfortable off the ball.
Right.
And
okay.
Actually, this game was kind of looking at it and being like, all they did was that they didn't have a brilliant opening, you know, period. And for a long time, it looked like Ukraine were in control of the game. Suddenly the goal happens and the entire context of the game changes and Romania pounce. And I wonder if that is just the kind of sense of being like, okay, you have it and we'll hit you where we know it hurts. There are opportunities there, I think, in this Belgian side. And we spoke about the defense potentially being a slight weak point in there that will allow them opportunities. I think they will actually be very comfortable in a game state where they're just like, all right, have the ball. We'll sit in front of you and we will play with this kind of ultra hardworking defensive style that got them unbeaten through qualification. And suddenly they're like, okay, that's fine. And I do wonder if Belgium, panicking a bit after that first result, sort of resorts to what they did towards the end of this game, which was Kevin De Bruyne dropping into sort of deep quarterback role and just slinging balls into the box for Openda and Lukaku. Now, obviously, there is always going to be goal threat when you've got De Bruyne supplying Lukaku and Openda. But if Belgium start to panic and they're like, oh my God, if Romania score a goal on the break in the first half and it goes in at 1-0, you're kind of thinking, well, we could be out in 5 minutes time. And that's the kind of end of when kind of teams panic. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do. And I've got a funny feeling that Romania might end up with 6 points after 2 games.
Yeah, look, they're going to have to hold up well. Belgium did still have 16 shots in that game against Slovakia. What I do like is the head coach of Romania, Edward Iordanescu, said, I've seen this team called all sorts, but please don't call them anything like a golden generation. We've had those before. This is the generation of soul. We have such a big heart, such a soul, and no one has ever had that. This has to be the generation of soul for Romania, and this generation is limitless. So I'm saying, maybe you can make the quarterfinal. Mate, the head coach thinks it's limitless. He's saying this could never end.
Well, if we're starting to see a team that are just very comfortable against the ball, the bigger teams are going to take note of that, aren't they? And they're going to be like, oh, that's going to be an interesting game. No one is going to want to play them. And I think they're pretty much, you know, 1 foot, as we say, with that goal difference already, 1 foot into the round of 16, wherever they finish, they're not going to be scared of anyone. And it's really, really exciting. Right, Jonas Zarezny says, what a great start to the Euros. God, I love international football. However, there is one terrible thing about it all as an American. Fox Sports. Who was the genius that had Alexi Lalas running halftime shows? Poor Peter Schmeichel and Giorgio Chiellini. The worst thing from the weekend. Hungary versus Switzerland wasn't being shown anywhere apart from Fubo. What is going on? Also, during the Spain game, all anyone could talk about was Lamine Yamal. Yes, the kid is amazing, and yes, he played well, but you don't need to speak about him or anybody 50 times in a match. There was no talk about Carvajal's first Euro performance, near man of the match, by the way, absolutely agreed. Nico Williams, Fabian Ruiz's PSG resurgence, etc., etc. It really bothered me. Sometimes it's just terrible to have ears. One other thing that really bothers me is social media during these tournaments. I know I do it to myself by scrolling, but why does every conversation and post have to be about comparing players or hating? Just enjoy the football. I truly wonder if a lot of these people even enjoy it. Anyway, what match are you excited for on match day 2? I can't wait for Netherlands against France. Have a good week. Enjoy the footy. Enjoy Germany and bring on the copper. Yeah, absolutely. It's about to get madder. It's about to get madder in here.
It is, yeah. We've got a lot of football to watch from later this week. But look, he's right. Why do people bother watching if they just want to moan after every game? Like, what is the point of watching football? What game am I looking forward to? We've already talked, obviously, about Holland v France on Friday, which is the most interesting one, and the fact that Romania could, you know, really shackle Belgium and send them packing. But Spain, Italy's got proper traditions to it too, isn't it? That's going to be a cracker.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm going to be in Dortmund for Turkey versus Portugal, which is really exciting on Saturday. I think that's one that I'm really excited. Obviously, we haven't seen the Portuguese yet. You'll have watched them by the time that you're listening to this, but we haven't had that chance yet. I'm really looking forward to that one as well. And look, there's a couple of really interesting kind of battles where you're suddenly like, okay, a win here could see you through. And look, you can think what you like about the system that allows third place teams to qualify. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of it. And actually, I would expand the Euros to 32 teams. I know that's not particularly popular opinion either, in terms of some of the teams that qualify not being up to scratch. But I think it just at least makes for a system that allows you more sense. And that last kind of set of group games feels like it has more riding on it at this point, I think, than it would with more groups. So it's intriguing. The Dutch versus the French, especially without Mbappe, I think is going to be a really interesting lineup. I'm really intrigued to see how Ukraine try and bounce back against Slovakia, who will be on a massive high after their win over Belgium. And then, yeah, that Belgium-Romania game to finish things off on Saturday feels really, really tasty and incredibly important.
Yeah, mate, it's just been so exciting so far. The first few days, there was loads of goals. Now we're getting a few surprises along the way as well. So this is what tournament football is all about. Look, in our UEFA Fantasy League, I'm just going to have a quick look at that before we finish to see who's top. Oh, it's the Yeehaw Cowboys. William is top of the league as we stand right now, with Jordan just behind him and Fergus right in there too. So yeah, the ranks league ended up with a reasonable number, mate. There's a good, decent batch of us in there. I'm
350 people in the ranks league.
350, yeah, that's not too bad. I mean, could have been more of you. I know there's a lot more of you that listen to this podcast than that, but never mind. You don't want to play for Euro Fantasy, you'll miss. I'm 27th in the league, mate. That's a lovely start.
I'm not going to talk about where I am. It's just deeply mate, uncomfortable.
You can't let me beat you at this, surely.
Let's say that my number begins with a 3.
Is it in the 30s or the 300s?
No, it's not in the 30s.
Oh my days.
I do have
what
four
an embarrassment
players
to rank FC.
I do have four players left to play.
So
the only kind of saving grace of this one.
I'm going to go top of the league, and I mean like the whole Euro Fantasy League if these four bang tonight.
I really need Portugal to win by a lot of goals this evening and not concede. That would really, I think, help things out a little bit. But we
will be
see.
Laughing and as Portugal have just been held 0-0.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and with that, I think it's probably time to call it a day. It's been lovely talking through all the bits and bobs of the Euros. We'll see how we go. We might be able to do a couple more things next week and change it up a little bit. But I'm excited to see these last couple of match days. Thank you very much for all of your questions. Shout out to the Rank Squad on Patreon for providing such thought-provoking questions. Thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins, live from Germany. I hope you've all enjoyed this episode. I am off to go and watch Turkey, Georgia. There's loads of Turkish and Georgia fans in the area where we're in. Two of my friends are already up there at the Westfalenstadion to watch that one. The atmosphere, I imagine, is going to be absolutely amazing. Georgia's first game in a European Championship. So they've already won just by qualifying. But for now, from us, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back very, very soon. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything. Because anything can happen after noon.